Welcome to the Stoic Handbook podcast. This is John Brooks speaking. First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for being a member of the Stoic Handbook community and taking the time out of your day to listen to my podcast, read my newsletter, and put the ideas to practice to level up your practical wisdom. If you're a fan of my work and you want to support the show, you can sign up to the premium version of the Stoic Handbook podcast. You can either do this directly from within Apple Podcasts, or you can go on stoichandbook.supercast.com. When you sign up to Stoic Handbook Premium, you'll get access to my existing library of Stoic meditation and contemplation courses. I make each course about a specific emotional topic like negative thinking or anxiety, relationships, anger, etc., as well as workshops, exclusive Ask Me Anything sessions, and ad-free standard episodes. There's a 7-day free trial, so you can check it out, see if it's good for you. I'm always adding new content, and I take a lot of time to craft my courses to make them as high quality as can be. One of the listeners of the Stoic Handbook Premium told me that they listened to my anxiety course over 50 times. People often like to go through them over and over again. So like I said, you can check it out, see if it's a good fit for you. It's this podcast, plus a bunch of premium episodes, meditations, talks, workshops, etc. And I also open up the space for questions as well. If you want to talk to me and get me to record a podcast episode on a specific topic for you, that's what Stoic Handbook Premium is there for. Now let's go into today's episode. Hello, fellow Stoics. Today's episode is going to be with my co-worker and dear friend, Eric Brown. I'm going to introduce Eric and share our discussion in a moment. It's an amazing one all about habits and discipline, self-development practices, meditation, and so on. But Eric is creating an experience called Warrior 100, in which a group of individuals go through a cohort experience committing to 4 warrior practices for 100 days. The cohort starts September the 1st. I just want to let you know that Eric has provided a 10% discount code if you're interested in this. The code is STOIC. The link is phoenixculture.earth/warrior100. But everything will be included in the show notes. So if you want to find the link and you want to find the discount code, just look in the show notes if this experience appeals to you. Just wanted to let you know. And now let's crack into my discussion with Eric Brown. Enjoy. Welcome, Eric Brown, also known as EB.
Thank you, man.
We've recorded a few podcasts, and some of the podcasts we've recorded primarily on the High Existence podcast, but also some clips in other places have been very popular. And we've talked about work, spirituality, psychedelics, your retreat experiences, productivity, just like the full spectrum, social anxiety. And it's always something interesting that comes from these discussions. I just want to give a quick intro into our relationship and who you are for new listeners. We've been working together now for a number of years on the High Existence blog and podcast, and also Apotheosis Retreats. And you have been the director of High Existence for the last couple of years as well. And now you're going to be focusing more on Apotheosis Retreats, which is like a spin-off of High Existence, which is like in-person transformational retreat experiences. And you've also been doing a lot of work with your newsletter, Serious Play, which I want to get into a lot more. Phoenix Culture as well. And you describe Phoenix Culture as the generative frequency for a holistic culture, which is pretty epic. I like the sound of that. And you've also... and this is the thing that I really want to dig into with you today. You've also been running Hero 100, and you're soon to be running Warrior 100. So yeah, let's just start there. What is Hero 100? People who don't know.
Fortunately, you know, thank you for all of that, man. And yeah, we've built and released many things over the years together. And one of the things I appreciate about the Hero 100 is that on the surface, it's actually fairly straightforward to explain. The Hero 100 was a 100-day challenge where each day there were 6 specific, we called them daily disciplines to complete. And if you completed all 6 in one day, we considered that a successful day. And we took a group of about 100 people for the first round through 100 days of that. The six disciplines we had for the Hero 100 were, we had minimum thresholds, like the lowest amount of an activity we would consider actually doing it. So it was 3 minutes of a cold shower, at least 12 hours of intermittent fasting, getting rid of one personal possession, so we called it item elimination, 20 minutes of journaling, 20 minutes of meditation, and then a self-selected personal ritual. Examples of that might be, my personal one was getting up with the sunrise. Some people did language learning. Some people did practicing martial arts, exercise, stuff like that. And so it was six daily disciplines, 100 days long. And it was really beautiful. It was beautiful. It was hard, but powerful.
I really like the focus on these kind of small activities people can do in the form of challenges, rituals, disciplines each day. It's a break from consumption of knowledge, you know, and theory. It's like, you know, so many books, so many online courses and videos. This is more about doing it. I'm just wondering why you decided to put that as a focus and something that you wanted to work on. Like, why did you want to hone in on these practices as the focal point of this experience rather than teaching or some other kind of therapeutic process?
I think you make the best things for yourself and for people. Like, I think you build the best products and experiences when you're making it for yourself. When you literally like, what is exactly what I need right now? Because yeah, I mean, you know yourself most intimately. And so the 100-day length, the specific challenges, it came together. The core idea of it came together very quickly once I admitted to myself both the current frustrations I had with myself and my character and the opportunities I could see for myself and for my character. And they're often very close together. I was sitting actually in this room just before Christmas last year. And I had this, you know, whatever you would call it, an intuition, a kind of message, a kind of knowing. And the sentence that ended up coming out of that was, you need to ground your devotion in discipline. I think I'm very good and have been in the past of going fairly deep on something fairly quick and spreading out quite broadly. I think one of the shortcomings I've often had is that I'm not as strong as going very deep in a single thing for a very consistent amount of time. There's pros and cons to being able to do both of those, but I was willing to admit and willing to actually see the potential of, you know, the joke I was always using was like, what if I didn't keep restarting my meditation practice from day one? You know, I was really good at like, oh, let's do it for like 30 days or like, yeah, I got like a 40-day streak or, oh, I hit 12 days this time. And it was like, what if I just actually kept that practice going? I know it's important to me. I know I want it to be a part of my life, but it wasn't translating into I always call it the identity level. Like, it wasn't translating into, no, I'm just a meditator. I'm someone who meditates every day. And yeah, that was another kind of, again, both frustration and opportunity in my life where I almost had a safe space in the realm of ideas, concepts, and theories. And it wasn't always showing up in just embodied action. And so it was like, look, I don't need to learn. I could say countless reasons, you know, cite all the studies of why cold exposure is good, why meditation is valuable, how journaling can help, all of this stuff. And yet it wasn't showing up in the hours of my day. And so it was born from both of those, like just, yeah, both the pain of being myself and the opportunity of becoming a more full version of myself and just being willing to admit that the key to unlocking both of those, like the resolution to that, wasn't another idea. It was actually time in on the cushion, time in front of the page, actually just doing it. Maybe I'll stop there on that.
It's really interesting, that question of what would your life be like if you didn't fall off the meditation practice? That's something I've contemplated as well. You've got a lot of insights now after running Hero 100, but also, you know, years and years of implementing different practices and working with other people on different disciplines. Why is it that we fall off from our meditation practice? What are some of the most common reasons for that?
Yeah, and it was one of the, I think for many of us, it was one of the really beautiful and really challenging parts of the experience overall, is the things that come up that you can't really plan for. I mean, one example for me personally is you very quickly get to the end of the honeymoon period. And yeah. I mean, honeymoon period is most commonly used in kind of relationships where you have all of that excitement and freshness and novelty. You know, there's this kind of like new mysterious person you get to interact with. And it's the exact same way with any concept, theory, or practice that you start. Right. Oh, I'm going to do meta meditation. It sounds so foreign and exotic and exciting. And that energy will carry you. I think it can carry you for 3 to 4 weeks tops. And eventually the kind of excitement of it just fades into the background. And that is a huge stopping point. I think that's been a huge stopping point for me where I actually noticed this specifically with the meditation practice in this, where the kind of external excitement has faded, but the internal intrinsic motivation hasn't fully come online yet. And you're in that uncanny valley of like, this is hard. I'm still doing it. I don't really see myself getting better at it yet. I'm not internally excited to do it yet. And often at the first moment of turbulence in your life, like you miss the normal time you do it, or you have some stressful day, it just drops. So the honeymoon period is a big one. The second one is, and this, again, this is why I really like the Hero 100 container. Whether we'd like to admit it or not, I think a lot of us have either a deep perfectionist mentality or similarly a kind of all or nothing thinking. One of the things, and what I mean by that in the context of meditation, is like, it's very difficult once you've missed 2 days in a row or 3 days in a row to actually renew your intention and come back with the same level of vigor and commitment and passion. Those are often the moments where it's like, oh, it looks like I failed at this again. It wasn't just immediately accessible. And then it gets dropped and it sits in the corner for a month or two. Yeah. Until again, you probably come across some other fancy modality and you get that honeymoon period again and you go through the same cycle again and again. So reckoning with that perfectionist or all or nothing thinking is really challenging. I think it's worth acknowledging, just you actually introduced me to this term probably a year ago, or just the distinction between healthy and unhealthy fuel sources. Mm-hmm. Like what is actually driving you? What is actually carrying you? I think there's an element, particularly in the personal growth, health and wellness space, of I think a lot of the time people start kind of discipline work or habit building work, it can come from an unhealthy fuel source of like, you're a piece of shit, get better. Like, why can't you do this? It comes from this very like negative self-critiquing space. And that is almost, it certainly doesn't let you sustain over time, right? If you think of like putting sand in a car engine, like it's going to self-destruct at some point. You can't sustain that. And so, yeah, if you started any of this from a critiquing, overly negative, overly like disciplinarian instead of disciplined space, mm-hmm. I think that's another way that you just run up against a wall eventually, whether that's 2 weeks or whether that's 8 weeks.
Yeah, I like that. Another reason, just reflecting on this, I think that people might start getting into these practices is to be better than other people in some way, right? Maybe they didn't feel adequate growing up or something. And so they want to meditate to be more mindful than the other person, to be more special in some way. And that's like kind of a bit of a paradox, right? Because to meditate to be better than the next person is like not very mindful. If you're mindful of those thoughts, you just go, oh, I can see that thought. And then you let it go. But to chase after it and like compete with people when you're doing these practices is also probably an unhealthy fuel source. but also probably natural for a lot of people in the beginning, right? So there's no need to judge yourself, just recognize it. You talked about the distinction between discipline, which can be translated from, I think the Latin phrase discipulus, which means pupil. So like discipline in its original context means to teach. And a lot of us associate it with like punishment and, you know, beating yourself up, you know, which is one form of teaching, but I don't think we would be happy if schools taught like that, you know. So what do you think, like, how do you find the balance between this kind of pull your bootstraps up and just get on with it, don't think about it, your emotions don't count, sit down and meditate approach, versus, you know what, I'm really stressed today, I don't feel so good, I should give myself a day off, you know, like, because there's some wisdom in both, you know, any extreme is probably going to be missing something. But yeah, how do you reconcile those two viewpoints?
Oh, there's so much goodness here. I'm really hooked on this. I want to speak to your discipline comment quickly, because this has been exciting me a lot. And yeah, just to unpack what you alluded to, the way that's come up for me is, yeah, if you actually like go to the dictionary, or if you go Google dictionary and you Google discipline, there are two definitions that come up. There is to discipline someone, which is like essentially negative consequences for disobeying orders. It's like you need to be disciplined, right? There's also a discipline, which is essentially an area of study. Like biology is a scientific discipline. Jiu-jitsu is a martial art discipline. Zen is a philosophical discipline. I got really excited about the second definition of discipline. Particularly, I put out this piece on Serious Play called the Discipline of Surrender, where it was like the core idea there was I had yoga in my head. Sorry. Yeah, this theory is exciting me. So I want to unpack this, because I think it's really important, because I think it was one of the things for me in my own life, hardcore disciplinarian discipline, like just never landed. I was like, no, it's not going to happen. And there had to be another way. So the question that was in my head is, I actually got this from Alan Watts, I'm not going to lie. So shout out Alan Watts. In several of his talks, he talks about how breathing can be a voluntary and an involuntary action. If you're thinking about breathing, you're voluntarily doing it. But if you're focused on something else, you're involuntarily doing it. The question I had in my head was, what would involuntary discipline look like? Like, how could you just be disciplined naturally or without as much of the hardcore effort associated with it? And to me, it was surrender was actually the example. Because if you, for example, surrendered into the yoga, into the discipline of yoga, one of the things in yoga is you essentially have a daily physical practice. Like the asana practice is meant to be done daily. And if you actually gave yourself over to yoga, you would be on the mat every day. And that's not because it's a forcing action on your end. It's because you've actually, and again, some people have resistance to this language, but I don't mean it literally in any negative way. You've actually like submitted your will to the discipline. Like, tell me what to do and I will do it. I think people often see that as weakness, but I think it actually takes an insane level of strength to be like, no, I'm letting go of all the other options and I'm actually going to submit and surrender and pursue this. It's actually funny. It's weirdly enough, it's one of the more direct paths to overcoming chronic dabbling syndrome, is you kind of have to just cut off all the other options. There's a second element to your question on being really honest with yourself. What I mean by that is I've seen people on both sides of the extremes. I've seen the kind of people who are really good with the kind of Goggins, Jocko level, just 4:30 a.m., get the fuck up and do it, fuck your feelings. And then I've also worked with many, many people who lean perhaps to the more passive spiritual side of like, no, force is always wrong. I just need to do it. If it's not in the flow, I'm not going to do it. And yeah, the answer for that is fortunately, there's a way that both of those can come closer towards the center while still being disciplined. I think the hardcore people need to find different fuel sources, something that they actually care about and brings them meaning. And yeah, I think the softer side could actually benefit a lot from just do it. Like, just actually, I use surrender a lot, but it's like, yo, just surrender into it. Like, I don't want to do it. Great. Like, and it's the mindfulness thing that you were speaking to earlier. Yeah. It's like, and this is why I appreciated the length of the 100 days, because it runs you up inevitably against the justifications that your mind start using.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I'm too tired today. Oh, I can't see immediate results. Yada, yada, yada. And you can practice the skill of just saying, okay, you know, thank you, mind. Appreciate your comment. I'm going to go do this anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. This, I love all of this line of inquiry. A couple of comments. So the first one on the hardcore disciplined people like Jocko and Goggins, they're like poster men of this movement. We look at them and then we compare our experience to their experience, right? Like, we imagine running an ultra marathon and compare ourselves to Goggins. We imagine waking up at 4:30 a.m. every day and doing deadlifts. We compare ourselves to Jocko Willink. And then we make conclusions based on that contrast. There are people who like to do free solo climbing, right? Where they will climb up mountains and buildings. If you were to do that, or most people, they would be in a state of panic, like maybe on the verge of heart attack or something like that, right? Like insane fear and panic and overwhelm. To the climbers, they're in a state of bliss, tranquility, focus, zen. They are loving it. So who are we to say what people like Jocko and Goggins are actually experiencing when they're carrying out these actions of discipline? Is it possible that they are actually experiencing pleasure, like insane dopamine release by doing these difficult things? Which brings us to the OG philosopher Socrates. Socrates said somewhere that discipline is the ultimate pleasure, which is an interesting claim, right? How can discipline be pleasure? And if you've ever been on a diet or something and someone's offered you like a cookie and you say no, there's this kind of pleasure of knowing who you are, of like doing the right thing, you know? When you stand up for something you believe in, there's some kind of deeper character-based pleasure there, you know? So when Jocko wakes up at 4:30 a.m., there's like a character-based pleasure. Like, I'm proud of myself, right? Yeah. It's not about like, I'm hating myself. It's like, I love myself because I was able to do this thing. And it's not the pleasure you get from sugar or something like that. It's like a deeper type of pleasure. And then your point on resistance versus surrendering to the discipline. A lot of us believe, I think, that our resistance is the accurate voice, you know? So like our higher selves say, like, we should meditate, we should go to the gym or something. And then our resistance kicks in. It's like, no, 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 no. And we don't surrender to it. And we get confused, which one's right? And it's pretty obvious which one's right, right? The resistance is really right. And Socrates had this guiding supernatural voice that he called the daemon. And this daemon would always kind of tell him what not to do. And he mastered this ability to listen to it. Like, oh, you should stand up to those bullies, or you shouldn't give in to authority, or you shouldn't lie. And this voice was there telling him what to do. There's a story, he saved someone from a battle. They gave him a medal of valor. He rejected it and gave it to his friend. Something told him to do that, right? You know, something deeper. So there's something that I really like about that. Like, what is that voice telling you to do? And what is the voice that's getting in the way of that? If you surrender to that daemon, you're probably going to have that effortless discipline. You know, I don't think Socrates was like struggling like every day. He was just following this like inner light, you know, like, do this, don't do that. You know, I'm just kind of going with it. What do you think about that?
Oh, I absolutely love it. Yeah. I mean, the most simple, like, guiding light I have in my life for the work I do and where I try to show up is something like identity level transformation. Like, if people actually want to fundamentally change, great. So do I. Like, it's part of human nature. Like, let's do it together. And that's why the retreats, right, have been such a major part of my own life and the work I try to do, because they are extremely potent containers to give you a visceral feeling of what else is possible, like actually kind of spotlight the future you that you could access. The frustration I had in my own life and that I saw in many others is it's really those integration periods that person is born, or Socrates actually always used midwifed, that you like midwife this new person. And it takes time. It can take longer and less time than you might be willing to admit. Like if you show up consistently for it, it can take less time than you might imagine. But if you're half-assing it, it'll take way longer than you imagine. And that's also why like the 100 days was really helpful, because it gives you the structure to actually go through the messiness of, like, I've been using animals that molt examples, like to shed your skin, like a snake or lobsters when they have to crawl out of their shell because it's too small. That's not an overly comfortable process. It's actually nice to be held in that. But something that really hit me, and this was again being kind of willing to admit some of my own like biases or justifications, I was saying, your identity is largely your embodied action. Like it's what you do each day. And that's it's both an obstacle and an opportunity. Like if you want to own the identity and feel rooted in the identity of being a meditator, there's only actually one thing you need to do. And that's either an obstacle or an opportunity. It's just meditate regularly. There's a difference if you want to consider yourself a good meditator, like if you want to cultivate skill in it. But the only thing you need to do to be a meditator is meditate. And if you're happier to stay in the realm of ideas and concepts and just talking about it, that's a huge obstacle because it means you're never actually going to do it. If you're just getting started, it's a huge opportunity because the only thing you need to do every day is cast a vote. James Clear speaks about this very, very beautifully. If you search like James Clear habits, identity, like habits and your daily disciplines cast a vote for the person you want to be and for the person that you're becoming. Same thing with writing. If you want to be a writer, sit down and write. That is the only cost, like that is the price of admission into the identity of being a writer. Once you're there, we can talk about cultivating the skill and becoming really good at it, but that's actually different, right? Mm-hmm. That's like stage two. That's a mastery process rather than a identity change process. So all to say, I think that's a really good call out that, yeah, I believe those guys. And there is this, I think it's a more rooted, like it's a much more grounded, firm kind of pleasure or satisfaction. It's not the short dopamine spike. It's almost the pleasure of integrity. This is what is important to me. And my thoughts, words, and deeds are in alignment with that. And there's actually this very, very natural level of, joy and self-compassion, self-respect, that comes from that. And that's much harder to shake. Like it's not as fragile. And that's a really great place to base your sense of satisfaction and life pleasure on.
Mm. Yes, I like that, the pleasure of integrity. So Friedrich Nietzsche, German philosopher, he said that the formula for greatness is amor fati, right? It's quite a bold claim. He said a lot of things, but the formula for greatness is amor fati, which can be translated as loving your fate or like full acceptance of how things are. If you were to break down what that means, loving your fate, I see two skills that would like lead to that. One skill is to learn how to love what you can't change, whatever it is. Right. So learning to love the way that the cosmos has ordered things, simply because that's the way it is. Right. That's the first skill. The second skill, which ties in to Hero 100 and other discipline practices, is learning to love what you know is good for you. If you find me someone who can learn to love what is good for them, that is, they're on their way to greatness, you know? Yeah. And if you can't do that, if someone's like, I just can't enjoy this thing. I just can't enjoy moving. I can't enjoy meditating. I can't enjoy writing, even though I really want to be a writer. You need to work on that. Like, what do you need to do to learn to enjoy it? And that's kind of the challenge. Like, you've got 100 days, 6 disciplines. At some point, you have to learn to enjoy it, because if you don't, you're going to be suffering the whole time. You're not going to enjoy a single day. You're going to come to the end of it going, I've just tortured myself. literally tortured myself for 100 days. And then there's another person who's like, tortured yourself? Like, I've had a deep identity level shift. This has been the time of my life. I've loved it. Or because like they probably have the skill of learning to enjoy the thing that they know is good for them.
Incredible, incredible point, man. And I mean, we saw this play out. We saw this play out. We finished the 100 days last week. And it's not even, this is again why a lot of people have asked, like, why 100? And it's because you cannot run away from 100 days. Like, you cannot distract yourself for that amount of time. You can't actually even rely on willpower for that amount of time. Like, it will not sustain you. And so to your point, you're either going to have to make some kind of flip, or, you know, we saw, it's funny, at the beginning, in the early days of the challenge, I actually related to this negatively, but coming out the other side of it, I relate to it positively now. Is we had about a 35% attrition rate, meaning there were just people who did not get to the end. I don't care, like, I don't mean like they got to the end perfectly, like they hit a lot of the days. I mean, they just stopped. Yep. And ghosted and left. And to your point, there were equally other people. There were some people who only hit like what we would call something like a 30 or 40% completion. Because again, there was a very clear threshold of like, you have to do all six every day to have a like completed day. So even if you hit four or five, we still technically didn't count that. But there were people who probably only had 40 days completely done and then a scattering throughout, who said it was immensely powerful for them. Because it, a kind of mantra I had throughout the challenge was like, it is and isn't about the daily disciplines themselves. Like, fasting has real benefits, great. Cold shower has real benefits, great. Meditate, like all of the actual challenges themselves have strong, real benefits, but it's more about the process. Like, it's you going through this and how you relate to yourself, how you relate to the challenges, how you relate to the process that's unfolding, that is way, way, way more significant. Because yeah, there are some people who had a rocky start with the all or nothing. You know, if for some reason they missed one, they weren't doing any of the other challenges. And if it was only like a 2-week challenge, you could probably squeak by with that just fine. But after 100 days of sitting in meditation and journaling about your experience, you can't run away from that. And you have to investigate it. You have to investigate it. And so, yeah, you know, come day 56, you're almost like 2 months deep of the same thing every single day. You just have to be honest with yourself, or the challenge like forces you to be honest with yourself of like, why am I unwilling to enjoy something that I signed up for, that I know is good for me, that is helping me become better? And man, that will, the way I've been framing the Warrior 100 is like, it will break you before it rebuilds you. And yeah, like you have to go, there's a kind of dark night period that comes because again, you're confronting like low self-worth, like low conscientiousness, self-sabotaging behavior. And it's like, you know, you can take 100 days of moderate discomfort to chew through that, or you can let it just infect your life for the next 4 decades. Like, yeah, this is going to be tough, but the other side of it is very freeing. And also want to recognize and shout out, like, Jocko does probably have one of the best lines in this space of discipline is freedom. Mm. Like, if you want to write a book and you can't sit down to something for more than 2 weeks, it's never going to happen. If you want to become really skilled at anything, follow a mastery path without discipline or any level of consistency, it's just not going to happen. And so it's a kind of gift.
Yeah. And like that, the discipline equals freedom applies both on a personal level, but also societal as well. If you don't have rules and regulations, this freedom can't actually exist, right? Then it's just fighting and power games. The fact that you have like, I know my rights, allows you to be free, you know, like that. There's something about the kind of structure and the orderliness of a system, either yourself or society, that allows for freedom within that. And he also says the opposite of discipline is not freedom, it's chaos, you know? So you have like discipline is freedom, And then lack of discipline is not freedom, it's chaos. So you have chaos versus discipline. Yeah, I really like that.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, yeah, it's a really good one. I like that you were able to get these insights about the percentages of people who went on this journey, like 35% attrition rate. That's an interesting one. And almost like that throws down the challenge for the next group. Are you going to be in that 35%? And I'm sure the people in the initial 35% had stuff going on, right? Like legitimate excuses. And I'm sure if they tried it again, they may be able to make some changes and learn from that, you know, learn from the pain of stopping. So there's always something valuable in it. Like no matter what happens, you're going to get a lesson. But yeah, that's the question. Abraham Maslow said that only 2% of the population will be self-actualized or have what it takes to be self-actualized. Now that's I don't know where you got that number from. But, you know, that's like also a good question. Are you going to be in the 2%? Are you going to be in the 35%? You know, where do you want to fall? Whenever I've watched these shows on the military and they do these selections, like, can you get into the SAS? And they say, well, the people who qualify for the SAS are not people, that's the Special Air Service in the UK, are not people that have the biggest muscles or the best cardio. They're the people who can withstand the most amount of pressure psychologically and yeah. don't give up. And I listen to that and go like, I'm sure I could do it, as I'm sure a lot of us do. Like, if I was one of them, I could do it. But this is almost like a way that you can test that. Because if you're dropping out 50 days in, are you sure you have what it takes? Like, yeah. you know, are you sure? Because I'm sure there's a midway point in every difficult thing, whether that's a psychedelic retreat, a meditation retreat, some kind of difficult testing period, that you feel this dark night of the soul. Like, I want to quit. I don't know if I can do this. In every superhero movie, hero's journey, there's that moment, you know, and what you have to do. It's like sink, swim, rise, or fall. And I really like that it kind of brings that out of it. And hero 100, right? You have to go through the hero's journey. You probably wouldn't want people to feel happy all the way through and find it super easy all the way through, right? Because yeah. if that happens, cool. But we often learn the most when there is a little bit of difficulty or we are confronted with something about ourselves that we don't want to look at.
Yeah, and it's worth recognizing, like, it would almost be interesting to see if I could map this, but there was definitely a pretty standard, like, normal distribution curve, right? There was the 20-30% at the lower third who either dropped out or stopped responding. There was the middle chunk of people, and then there was the upper tail end of, like, there were 4 people who hit 100%, which, absolutely insane. I'm not one of them. I did not hit. And yeah, I mean, that was again, the kind of perfectionist thing for me, which became very important. There were a couple moments where we were traveling. It was funny. My partner and I, very early in, we were traveling back to our home and we were running around an airport in the US at 9 p.m. in the evening, trying to find these lounges, being like, do you have a shower that we could use? We have to do our challenge today. It was really fun. So there was a distribution. And again, like for me personally, much of the benefit I got from the challenge was correlated to how many days I completed, like my actual completion. But for others, it was more uncoupled and it was actually just having the mirror. The way like this was also, it was trying to take my own medicine, like the origin of this challenge as well, where it was like, you know, I'm very good at sitting on the sidelines being like, yeah, I could do that. Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, whatever, Goggins. Yeah, 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 yeah. And there was a moment where I mean, we've spoken about this on some of our previous conversations. One of the things I've actually admired and respected in you the most was what I perceived as your own ability to go very deep in something. Right. You had a few like really core areas that you would go really deep in. And I was like, I can't do that. Or I'm unwilling to do that. Like I was always way more in a positive way. I would say I went broader. In a negative way, I would say I was more scattered. And yeah, this is also the serious play kind of ethos where I was like, you know, I can do this. I can be disciplined. I can do something consistently. And just the poke back of like, yeah, prove it. Like, prove it. No talk. Like, talk is cheap. Everyone and their mother can say they could do this. Prove it. And so, yeah, that's how we made like the tracker. Everyone got this Notion document where you had to check everything off. And you can't you can't lie to that because it's rooted in each day and you can't go backwards in time. Like, you have an unbroken history of evidence on whether you can do this or not. And not meant to be, again, not meant to be coming from this like scolding teacher, like, look, you suck. But actually the opposite, where it's really nice now because I exported my 100-day list as a PDF, and I have this like image of like, oh, I can do this. Like, I see now, I have literally proven to myself that I can do this. And that embodied knowledge, again, this is what I meant earlier, that embodied knowledge of being able to do that is deeply rooted because it's undeniable. It's literally a part of my history now. And just having that as a kind of knowing in myself is funny. It's actually very freeing. It's like, all right, I can do this. What do I want to put that towards? Like, where do we want to go with this next?
I can imagine that the tracker, the checklist that you featured on Notion, right? You did on Notion. Yeah. Would have been quite confronting for certain people. And I am a self-confessed habit tracker. Like, I love to track habits. I have a habit tracker on my phone now. You know, I'm always tracking habits more so as a memory device, as a way to remember what's important. That's how I use it. And less as a way to kind of identify with numbers, you know, like, I am these numbers. It's like, no, totally. You are the person you are in the moment right now. But in the beginning, we do tend to identify with, you know, the past 30 days, like, you know, can I feel good or bad based on that? And that could be demoralizing if you've had a bad week. You know, you might think, well, I've had a bad week and the perfectionism kicks in. How can I change this? And I think there's a lot of wisdom to like a 24-hour goal. When you're looking at this habit tracker, yes, it's a way to document your life. Great. But really, the only thing that actually counts is today. Like, are you going to do these things today? Like, Start again. Forget every single day that's come before. And if you're unable to do that, if you've had a bad week and you're seeing like no habits were done, none of these disciplines were done, and that's really bothering you, then you probably need a bit of a reality check, in the sense that, you know, the truth is we are going to die. You know, that's a hard truth. And those stats don't really mean much in and of themselves. You know, it's more about like, what are you actually learning? How are you developing? How are you learning to cultivate value for other people? Whether you if you're a terrible human being, but you've had 100% completion rate on some task, right? And you're parading that around, but you're being rude to everyone, you don't get my respect. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's a documentation, but really it's like, what are you going to do today? And that leads me on to this idea that in Buddhism and Stoicism, you often see these two branches of these philosophies. One is like a practice for cultivating tranquility, peace of mind, freedom from suffering, practices for that. And then there's another branch, which is about ethics and character. So in Buddhism, you have mindfulness meditation, compassion-based meditation. And then you also have the precepts, do not steal, you know, don't kill, things like that. And the two work well together, you know. And so if someone's meditating 20 minutes a day, but then they're, you know, attacking people on the street, like, probably their meditation practice is not going to be so good, right? And there needs to be some kind of overlap. In Stoicism, you have the cardinal virtues, courage, temperance, justice, practical wisdom. But then you also have practices like premeditation of adversity and the view from above. You have the character and the kind of tranquility. And you could make the strong case that the two feed into each other. If you have a tranquil mind, are you going to be angry and spiteful?
Yeah.
Probably not, right? And if you're actively working on not being an angry and spiteful person, are you going to be more tranquil? You know, there's this kind of synergy between the two things. I'd like to just check in with you on how you see those two things going together, because I see Hero 100 as a set of practices that do both. You know, they are developing character strengths, discipline, courage, you know, stepping into the cold develops courage. You know, you're practicing those small things for when the big things count. But then the idea is you're also cultivating tranquility and peace of mind and happiness, you know, because they are self-care practices, all of them too.
Yeah, one of my favorite kind of visualizations of this came from a guy named Jordan Hall. And he used a like X, Y, and Z axis example. Like, if you have a sphere and Or maybe I'll make this a little simpler with like a bike tire. Like if you have a tire with several spokes and one of your spokes is shorter and your wheel is not round, it's not functional. Like you will have a very bad time, very, very bad time trying to go down the road on that thing. And yeah, so it's, I completely agree with what you said. I would take it further and say they're not only beneficial, I think they're essential. Like you have to develop holistically across the spectrum. Because they, each of the components benefits the others, and it also keeps the shadows or the shortcomings of the others in check, right? Like you need, this is why I think a lot of people recognize that like kind of discipline without heart is there's something off there, because are you really just doing this just to suffer? Like, are you really, is this just a masochistic exploration? And if so, why are you doing it? Right. But if it comes from heart, so it's not even like the heart helps, but the heart is also essential for the maybe effective or right outcome to actually take place. Mm. Yeah. And the, like a big part of the experience for me and a big part of the experience for me was just, how do you want to live? Like, who do you want to be? One of the most unexpected, but really beautiful, and this is what I mean about this is what we were speaking to earlier of the kind of value of, not the value, the satisfaction of integrity. So my personal ritual was getting up with the sunrise, and then I would just try to do all of the challenges like right then and there in the morning. So it was like sunrise, cold shower, meditate, journal. And the thing that really struck me more than, I mean, I felt great after doing it. I was always at like an 8 out of 10 kind of energy contentment after that, which I had never really done in my life. Never really had like a much of a morning practice. But the thing that struck me was the thing I was getting the most out of was I was actually putting myself first. Like I wasn't just jumping into work. I wasn't just, which I had normally defaulted to, like wake up, coffee, work. Immediately, my whole day just went to other people. And it's not, like, yeah, you can become off kilter and have that be kind of largely narcissistic. Like you can take self-service too far, but you can also take it not far enough and actually just give the entirety of your energy to other people constantly. And it's those small moments. And you pointed to something I really appreciated, which was this is also why this whole challenge is very action-based. For a lot of the things that people want to cultivate, courage, resiliency, open-heartedness, self-compassion, again, you can talk about cultivating that all you want, but you actually need like an embodied practice. I call them vehicles. Like you need a thing in the world that will take you to that destination of self-compassion or of courage or of bravery and or of discipline, of just doing the thing. And yeah, I'll speak to two examples. Like if you have a conversation in your life that you've been putting off for a long time because it's uncomfortable, you can actually get adjacent related benefits from doing cold showers. The moments before a cold shower are never exciting. The first moments of a cold shower are never, ever fun. But you can actually build the muscle of, actually, I know the other side of this. I know once I've done it, I'm going to feel insanely better. My mind is going to be clear. My energy is going to be clean, like focused. And so you do it and you get better at doing it and you get better at doing it and you get better at acknowledging the resistance and discomfort that is there without letting it stop you. And so actually the next time that opportunity for the difficult comment or the difficult conversation comes up, you've actually built the muscle of, oh, okay, like I see this. I know I want to do this. I know my life is going to be better after doing it. And now I'm more comfortable doing that. And so you get on and do it. A second example of that that really was powerful for me was there's a Mark Twain quote. It's called Eat the Frog. And it's like, if you have to eat a frog in the course of your day, you may as well do it first thing. Like, just get it out of the way. Like, it's going to be somewhat unpleasant. Why would you suffer twice by anticipating it for the remainder of the day before actually doing it? And this really landed for me because I was like, there's no way. There's no way I'm doing cold showers at night. Like, there's just, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to show up at 11:30 and get in the cold shower. But I know I'm doing it today, so I may as well do it now. I may as well do it as quickly and as early and as cleanly as I can. And holy crap, you know, you do that for a month. And I started looking at some of the items just on the backlog of my to-do list where it was like, this is important to me, but it doesn't have a due date. And that's where most of your dreams go to die, right? Like, this is important, but I don't have to have it done by Wednesday. And that muscle really started translating. It just really settled into my psyche where I was like, oh, this isn't going to get done unless I make intentional time to do it for everything in my life. And I actually started knocking off a whole bunch of things outside of the challenge that had just been sitting, collecting dust. Small things like cleaning up my computer, bigger things like finding a new haircut style I wanted, like just these things that will sit and collect dust for time. But I was like, it just translated from my day. Maybe this is the way to say it. The examples of making sure I got the challenges done as early and cleanly as possible in my day translated to my life with the things I wanted to do in my life. It's like, yeah, I know there are things I want to have done in the course of my life, but unless I actually intentionally make the time for them, they're never going to get done. And I don't want to wait until I'm 60 to do them. So it's hard to like put this stuff on, you know, websites and sales pages and social media copy, but they're the things, and it's why, again, I keep coming back to this. It's arguably the core of the experience. Like, that is why the 100-day length has been so nice, because you have to figure all of this stuff out to keep it going. Like, if you're doing 14 hours of fasting and you go to a party on Saturday and don't stop drinking until 2 a.m, you're going to talk to yourself the next day when you can't eat until like 5 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's so many great insights that you can learn from, you know, you don't need to travel across the other side of the world, right? You can do it from your own home and you can learn so much about yourself and get these insights. I was listening to an interview with Tom Cruise recently, like, and regardless of what you think about Tom Cruise on a personal level, the guy does a lot of scary stuff, you know, like crazy stunts for the Mission Impossible movies, jumps out of planes dozens and dozens and dozens of times to perfect for certain stunts that he does, flies like fighter pilots for movies, you know, like, and the guy's like not 25 and he's doing all of these things. And he was asked, do you get afraid? And he doesn't seem like he does, but he just said, yeah, I do get afraid, but it just doesn't stop me from doing it. And there's something to that, right? Like, nobody wants to hear that, but when you learn to work with anxiety or kind of fear or trepidation, you know, you're just about to go into a cold shower. A lot of people want the feeling to go away. What does it feel like to feel the feeling, but to not let it stop you? That's a new kind of huge skill, right? It's a different way of relating. And I remember I've been training jiu-jitsu now for about coming up on 5 years. And for the first year, I would say every time I drove to the gym, I would have like butterflies in my stomach. Yeah, like every time, like sometimes 3-4 times a week, I'd get that those kinds of nerves. I didn't really know people at the gym very well. I didn't feel connected to the tribe, you know, and I would have these butterflies.
Yeah.
And it wasn't pleasant, but you know, the idea of like stopping my car and not going in, that would have just felt way worse, you know, just almost just like, hey, precious life, epic life, heroic journey that you could go on. Nah, just sit in the car. Like, I don't like that feeling, you know, that's a worse kind of feeling. It just feels like waste, you know, it feels like I've gone backwards that day. So that was an interesting experience to feel that. And, you know, if I had just gone, well, I don't like this feeling, so therefore I shouldn't go, then I would have just come up with a new problem. Well, I don't like this feeling of not feeling like I'm progressing at all in anything that I care about, you know, so what do I do then? You know, it's like just creates a new problem.
Yeah, this ties back into the resistance. Like, fear is essentially a kind of resistance. And yeah, there's a really almost delicate balancing act here, because the comment I want to acknowledge from what you said is, yeah, like you can just, a lot of people make too big of a deal of fear and of resistance. Like, there's 99.9% of your other conscious experience that's equally as valid that you could focus on, right? If you have a feeling of fear or a tightness in your stomach, you could also focus on the warmth of your cheek, and they're equally as valid, right? But you just like magnify and blow up the resistance as if it's some holy gospel that you must adhere to. The balancing act is like, you know, if you were running and you started getting real pain in your knee, there is a signal in that you probably shouldn't ignore, right? Just suppressing all of your feelings is also not probably a long-term healthy solution. Like if you do have resistance, great amounts of resistance or great amounts of fear, there's definitely something there. But yeah, I think it gets magnified way too much in people. It's just given way, way, way too much weight. I have this kind of cheeky joke that I make of like ... and ? Where it's like, oh yeah, but I'm tired. Oh yeah, but they might laugh at me. Oh yeah, but I might not be very good at this when I start. And like, are you presenting those as excuses? Like, why are you even saying that? Like if you can imagine it, it works better if you imagine it in a conversation, right? Like, oh yeah, but it's going to be cold. Oh yeah, but they might laugh at me. It's like, yeah. And is that going to stop? Like, is that the wall? And it's like, again, balancing act, because it's like, if that is actually the wall for you, if that is the obstacle, okay, great, right? Let's work on that. Like self-compassion, this is where we are. Let's work on that. But it's a very safe cop-out when that's presented as some kind of insurmountable obstacle. It's just no, next thought, you know, I'm going to do it anyways. Great. So it's a balancing act, but yeah, it's not an excuse.
There are these implicit global and sometimes toxic beliefs that we have that guide our surface level thoughts and actions that we don't question, right? So we can get into a big debate about whether I should do this activity or not, but we don't get into the debate about the belief that is underlying that surface level debate. So for example, the belief that feeling uncomfortable is a good excuse not to do something. That's one belief, cool. Right? Like I should only do things that make me feel good, right? That's another belief. It's like, why, right? Like nitpick that, like break that apart, like use the Socratic questioning method and ask like, is that always true? Like, do you think that I want to wake up like on very little sleep to look after a toddler every day? Do you think I want to get out of bed? Like, should I just stay in bed because it feels uncomfortable? It's like, no. Of course, I do want to get up as well, right? Because that's like my values and that's what's important to me. So the question is not, should you do something or not do something if it feels good or not? The question is, what do you value? You know, and then how can you live according to those values? If you don't, if you value a life of hedonism and pleasure and that, and you can say like, I've decided I'm going to live that kind of life. That's my philosophy of life, by all means. But then don't embark on Hero 100, right? Like, this is not for you. Go and just chill out and, you know, have some pleasure and stuff, right? But if you are committing to these values, live by them, right? That's what it's about. Can we talk about what Warrior 100 is? Because we've been talking about Hero 100, which is recently wrapped up. But yeah, what is Warrior 100? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so maybe the theoretical before the actual. I absolutely love the map and model of the Jungian archetypes. The very classic king, warrior, magician, lover. And I have this, I think many of us actually have explicitly or implicitly this perspective, because you hear it in conversations from people where I think many people feel like they are surrounded by a lot of grown-up children, that there has been some fundamental maturity process that didn't happen, and they're kind of around like 30-year-old man-childs, right? I think we as a society, fairly immature. And again, not from a distance, like equally there's a lot of immaturity in myself, right? So this is not just like othering people. I think we have all collectively missed some maturity process. And I think the hero's journey, the classic rite of passage, is actually that thing. I say all of this because the hero is one of the archetypes of the child. There's an immense amount of goodness in that as well, right? There's always good and bad. There's a lot of goodness, like being willing to take the weight of the responsibility of the world on you, like be the savior, like actually take total responsibility, like believe that there is something greater that you can become. This is all like heroic, the heroic thinking. It felt, and actually to me, that is like the starting point. And that's why the Hero 100 came first. Like it is the foundation. Like you really set up the psyche, the daily structure. Like you just get a person solid. If the individual is allowed to go through a healthy, stewarded growth process, the hero actually evolves into the warrior. Like the warrior is the evolved, refined, mature expression of the hero, because the warrior is able to do things like recognize their own limitations, recognize that they actually have limits, recognize that they can't do it by themselves, that they actually need to join a group, and that it's actually ineffective if they tried it by themselves. And so it felt only natural to actually go from the hero to the warrior. Again, I said this much earlier in the conversation as well, but even if I just tune back into what do I need most right now, like what is next for me, really taking the foundation and going deeper with it was that. And that, I mean, is absolutely just the domain of the warrior archetype, the warrior energy, the spirit, the self-mastery, the discipline, courage, bravery, honor, virtue, like really embodying these at a fundamental level. And so that is the kind of theory behind it. The actual Warrior 100 coming up, trying to honor that is fewer challenges of greater depth. And I mean, just to paint the picture, like I think many people have in their head, they could probably draw a reference to a really like holistic, aligned, developed warrior. I don't necessarily mean like a soldier. The examples I always have, something like someone who's gone very far in yoga, I think the Shaolin monks, I think Stoics, like true practicing Stoics, and Stoicism will take you to this point as well. The things that I think of that are like synonymous, like absolutely synonymous with an integrated warrior: physical fitness, like a capable body, honoring the mind-body connection, unwavering focus, like extreme concentration ability and focus. They're serving a greater purpose. You know, warriors are always like in service of truth, of the kingdom, of their neighborhood, whatever it is. And insane levels of integrity, right? They honor their word. They tell the truth. Their actions align with their values. They know what their values are. So I was like, great. What are the vehicles to do that? How do you cultivate that? And so we have four challenges. We're doing four daily disciplines for the Warrior 100, doing 45 minutes of physical training, whatever that is for you, because it's not reasonable to expect someone to go lift heavy at the gym for 100 days. So, you know, you can do a yoga session, qigong, stretching, calisthenics, basically anything more than a walk is fair game. So physical training.
You're honoring the body, right? The body-mind connection is what you said.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've actually divided it up, body, mind, spirit, heart. And we're trying to do a discipline that focuses on that. So the body is the body. The mind is, and you're familiar with this, John. We're going to do 45 minutes of concentration meditation. And we're actually going to walk people through the promise and the potential that we're willing to commit for everyone, is walking them through the first three stages of the mind illuminated, which is just the Bible, an incredible blueprint of how to cultivate concentration, like how to become undistractable is the way I've been using it, like how to actually maintain focus. So physical training, concentration training. For the virtues and values and purpose, we've like curated essentially 100 days of content around warrior values, warrior virtues, insightful questions to help tease it out of you as well. So that's on the surface, it's going to look like essentially journaling. right? Watch some of the material or read the material we've provided, reflect on it, and figure out how you want to bring it into your own life. So bravery, courage, honesty, integrity, service, mastery. And the final challenge isn't time-based, but it's essentially, we're calling it the integrity audit because it's hard to actually turn this one into a challenge, but I know that it needs to be here. It's essentially an ongoing commitment to tell the truth and have your actions be in alignment with your values. Again, hard to put that into something you can check a box on every day. But so the way we're doing it is we're asking people about an hour or two before they go to sleep to do essentially a run through of that day. Because everyone knows that feeling, you know, if someone makes a comment, say someone came up to you in your office environment and was like gossiping or talking shit about someone, you might actually have a moment of like, I don't want to be involved in this and I should do something about that. And that moment is an opportunity for integrity. Will you actually like remove yourself from the situation? Will you say that, no, I don't want to talk about this? And so the audit is like running through your day, noticing if there's any moments you didn't take that path. And actually you have about an hour or two to see if you can course correct that. And I think it's mostly, I'm excited for that one because I think it's going to be the hardest, honestly, like getting over white lies and stuff like that, or just, biting your tongue. Biting your tongue is probably the way it comes up for me more. It's like, I want to say something, but I don't want to, like, you know, getting over that. I think having 100 days of that mirror held up to you of just, was I in integrity? Was I in integrity? Did I say what I felt? Was this true? I'm excited for that one. So 4 disciplines, yeah. 100 days, body, mind, spirit, heart.
Yeah, that's very exciting. I mean, even if you just, like, the funny thing about the Warrior 100 is even if you did nothing other than the meditation, like that would be very, very, very powerful. And yet you're doing all of the other things on top. So when it comes to warrior, just reflecting on it now as you speak, one thing that I notice about warriors is that they are willing to do the right thing, even if there are negative consequences. Like if they know in their heart it's the right thing, they don't mind if the external world like looks down on them or shuns them or adds social pressure. Like a true warrior isn't going to just break all of their dearly held values because someone's looking at them with a stern face, right? So there's this kind of element of being able to withstand social pressure, like from the environment, to do the right thing. So I can imagine there's going to be a lot of like useful reflections in the check-ins and all of the different questions that are asked on, you know, can I maintain my integrity even when it might be uncomfortable, you know? And that's what you were saying about the cold showers, right? Like, I don't like this. It's uncomfortable. You go into it. Then that can be translated into your own work or something. Someone's being picked on. They want you to be silent. You're stepping into the cold shower. Right? Like you're just transferring the skill. Like, hey, excuse me, I'm not okay with this. It's all it takes. Right? Now you're in integrity again. You know, and that's the process that you can go through.
Or yeah, you know, the small text message to your friend at the end of the day, hey man, I said this earlier, but I actually, you know, that wasn't all of it. I was actually kind of uncomfortable with this.
Yeah.
Great. And that's part of it. It's like exposure therapy to telling the truth. Right? Like one of the stories I have still to this day, certainly in my past, is like, people can't handle my truth. Like it's going to be too much for them. It's going to make them uncomfortable. And it's an unfounded belief. And you can kind of expose yourself if you demonstrate, this is what I mean about the evidence in the world. If you can prove over time that actually people will respect you more when you are honest with them and they can trust that you will always be honest with them, you'll be like, oh, this is great. And then you've done that flip from the uncomfortable, like discipline part of it, to now I'm intrinsically motivated to do this because my life gets better and my relationships are more meaningful, all of it. And yeah, your point about just doing concentration, but the other stuff, this is what I mean about the hub and spoke of the wheel. Like they all balance each other out. Because if you are extremely physically capable, if you're vicious with no ethical foundation, I mean, it's worth recognizing that the shadow warrior has done the most damage throughout human history, like just atrocity after atrocity. You don't even want it. Like you don't even want to really know the stories, right? Because they're just awful. Also done by warriors. But you throw the baby out with the bathwater if you're just like, nah, the warrior energy itself is awful. And that's what you, I think we're actually like living in that, right? Like, I'm not advocating war. I'm not advocating soldiers. I'm not advocating any of that. But the goodness of the warrior energy, I think we're actually living in the lack of it. I've been trying to come up with some modern examples of this. And, you know, a few that really land for me are, you know, there's the really disciplined like gym goers who might feel aimless or purposeless. Like their whole life is just crafting their physique and that feels kind of empty, or they're apathetic. It's like you could actually benefit from the virtues and the values and really refining your character. Like you need, they balance each other out. Or, I mean, probably the most most personal for me, and certainly ones that we've seen in some of the spaces we've been in, is the very virtuous, aligned, like in integrity kind of spiritual community, lacking the teeth and the agency. And nowadays, the actual focus to enact change in the world, to actually like push back and exert force on the world, and that physical training, the discipline side of it would be really helpful for them. Or you have the kind of, you either have like the business tycoon or like the TikToker with just very poor, their honor and integrity is up for sale. Maybe I would say it that way.
Yes. No, yeah, because they might get emails from someone and they're like, how much for a mention? And they'll be like $10,000, and they won't even look at what they're promoting. Not all of them, but like the shadier ones, right? And that's not like super uncommon. That does actually happen, you know, like, because it's just like, it's quite common, probably.
I think we're, this is almost the like resisting forces. Like, I think we are collectively just going, I think societal standards are just getting lower and lower and lower. Like, there's the very classic like example of, you know, attention spans are like less than a goldfish, right? Imagine how how distractible people are right now. And there's something to the warrior energy of like, no, it's not that I don't care, but I'm not basing my standards off of the reference in the world. I'm going to set my own standards and strive for them. Because yeah, like integrity, I think, is eroding dangerously quickly in culture and society. Ethics, virtues, values. Like, I don't think these words even mean very much to most people nowadays. And the thing that really makes it hit home for me is, it's two things. It's kind of a present reflection and a future reflection. It's, how do you feel about yourself when you're by yourself? And how do you want to feel about yourself when you're on your deathbed? And I would at least argue, and I'm attempting to orient my own life of, it's more about how you showed up for it. Was I honorable to myself? Can I look myself in the eye and say, I respect you. I understand the work you're doing. Like, self-respect is really built on the foundation of integrity. Do you do what you say you're going to do? Is what you say you're going to do in alignment with your values? Do you have values? Are you pursuing virtue? I think if you build that foundation, again, not to say like your life is going to be transformed. You might still have many problems, many challenges, many obstacles, but you at least have a modicum of just unshakable self-respect, self-dignity, honor. And I think that's what people really want. They're honest.
The Stoics would argue, I think, that your character, you know, the person you are, and integrity, even though the word integrity is not used much by the Stoics, like it is, they are like kind of alluding to that in a lot of what they talk about. That if you make that a value, then you kind of detach yourself from social conditioning and society's standards of happiness and fulfillment. So society might say, well, to be happy, you've got to look like the person on TV, have a bunch of stuff, like da da da, have all these external things. That's happiness. There you go. And when we say, hang on a second, no, my definition that I'm deciding is to live according to my values and to be the type of person that I want to be. That's my definition. That does make you like impossible to mess with. You know, and like Epictetus has got these famous quotes like, you know, you can put me in chains, but you can't put my spirit in chains. You know, like,
yeah.
Right. It's like, it's like you can kill me, but you won't upset me. You can physically hurt me, but you won't harm me. You know, and it's like these subtle distinctions. But if you are sort of enmeshed with society's opinions of happiness and you need other people for your self-esteem, as a lot of the kind of young people do now, they're kind of hooked on validation from others. Like, if I can get 70 likes instead of 30 likes, I will be happier because of that. You know, like, give me my self-worth, please, world, you know, like, and that's the kind of way they're going through it.
Yeah.
You can play that game and you can play that game pretty well and you might succeed or not succeed and you can get your self-image pumped up. But then what will happen is that when it doesn't go well, your self-image is going to go way down. It's almost like a form of emotional gambling. You know, it's like, if I play this game well, if I, you know, if I enter into this raffle with my self-image and social media account, maybe I'll win big, you know, but maybe you won't. And like a stoic would be like, don't enter games you can't win. Like, give yourself 100 likes every day. That's within your control, you know?
Yeah. And again, this needs to land for people. Like, this is what we were talking about earlier of like, it's basically short term versus enduring pleasure or satisfaction or self-respect. Like, these things are so ephemeral. The external markers are so ephemeral, so temporary that, I mean, a bunch of ways to talk about it. My two favorites are, you're on the hedonic treadmill, right? You're like a hamster in the hamster wheel. Like, you have to keep this going and you build a tolerance to it. So you need consistently more, because once you get from 30 to 70 likes, then you need 140 likes every time, or you've now failed, right? You're now even doing worse and it might actually be harder. And oh my God, like, you can play that game as long as you want. I think it's eventually going to self-terminate. Because again, the dose dependency goes up. Like, you build it such a tolerance that, you know, yeah, that's really difficult. It's also the hungry ghosts. Like, the hungry ghosts of Buddhism are like these, yeah, you just keep inhaling it, but it never satisfies. It's inherently unsatisfactory because, yeah, if you dislike or don't agree with the person you are becoming, in order to get those things, it's like a self-terminating system. And yeah, it's tough.
So I have something to say. Is the Warrior 100, are you going to, is it like the Hero 100 with the payment? Like, if you succeed, you're going to be recompensated. Is that right?
Yeah. So one of the, I mean, they're the actual components of the experience. I just tried to bake in as much support and kind of allies on someone's side that they could have, so that they're more likely to succeed. They're more likely to be able to push through that resistance. Part of that is being able to do it in a group. The group was super helpful to me. Like, there are a couple of days I was waking up, I don't want to get up, but I know I'm doing it for the squad. Like, that feeling helped a lot. So community support. And yeah, I've been playing with this like gamification mechanism where for the Warrior 100, it's going to be at the beginning, you put up $200 and you earn back $2 for every day you complete. And so it's both, it hits both loss aversion. I don't know if this is technical. It hits loss aversion where it's like, yo, this is on the line. Like, I made this bet that I was going to be able to do this today and I don't want to sacrifice that. So I'm going to do it. That can give you a little bit of a push. And it's also like a positive reward for actually doing the thing, where it's like, you know, it's small. It's $2 a day. It's inconsequential for some people. But I just spoke to a guy who went through the Hero 100 and he said this term that I absolutely love. It's like, it creates this field of ambient support, where it's like, you have the people supporting you, you have the mechanism supporting you, you have the visual tracker and the momentum from that supporting you. So yeah, like, as far as support goes, we try to bake in as much as we can that is helpful for people. But, you know, we can't show up at your door and do it for you.
Of course,
right? Yeah. It still comes back down to you.
I was listening to an expert salesperson, and they were given this instruction similar to, you know, the classic Wolf of Wall Street scene, sell me this pen. And he was watching other salespeople try and sell this pen, right? And like some people were talking about like how good the pen was and nobody was going to buy it. Other people were like kind of trying to hit on pain points and nobody was buying the pen. So they said, right, it's your turn. And so he took the pen and he looked at the person who was kind of his like role play person to sell the pen to. And he said, hey, how much would you pay for this pen? And they said like $1. And he said, sold, right? So he was basically saying like, what do you think this pen is worth? How much would you pay for it? And they were like $1. And it's like, oh, great, there you go. Like everything has a kind of a value, right? So I really like that story because it illustrates like what is the value of something. So the question I put out to people is, what would you pay for 100 days of meditating 45 minutes a day? How much is that worth to you?
Yeah.
You know? Like, is it worth nothing?
I love that.
Is it worth like $1,000, $10,000, right? I don't know. But that's something for people to play with to see if Warrior 100 is aligned for them. Because to me, it's having the structure and the community to help people stick to something for 100 days that is going to be beneficial to them. And likely it will allow them to keep going well into the future with that. You know, what is it like 66 days to build a habit? You're going way past that. Super valuable, super valuable. So,
yeah, that's a beautiful framing. And again, for me personally, I'm really excited about the physical training challenge part of the Warrior 100 because it's a neglected area of my life, or it's not as developed as other aspects of my life. And the way I would also build on that is like if I am able to cement, to really root down physical training as just a part of my way of being, as just a part of my identity. On the scale of, you know, if I live long and healthy, like the scale of the next 5 decades of my life, you can't put a price on that. Or there's a very classic Sam Harris line of something like a calm, composed mind is just intrinsically beautiful. Yeah. Like just, and so the same thing, you know, if you come out the other side of the concentration meditation practice, being able to just have an aligned, centered, focused mind, I mean, that is literally every single moment of your waking conscious experience. For the rest of your life, you have now developed a skill that you can't develop without training because you actually have to rewire neural patterns and shit. Like that is immensely valuable. But yeah, the thing for me is like, I've tried and failed so many times to do this by myself, alone in my room on the cushion, and it just didn't happen. And so, yeah, having the container, having the strong intention of like, this is what we're doing. I'm here with my group. Like I'm doing this for me and I'm doing it for them. Yeah, it helps you see it through. And if you see through the 100 days, the switch I really want people to have and the switch that the 100-day length enables, at the beginning, it's something you have to add into your day. You're like adjusting your schedules. You're like canceling plans, or you're doing it when you're tired. Like it's something you have to exert force to do. The switch that happens is you start to notice the days when you don't do it, where it's become so normalized as a part of your life. It's like if you didn't eat lunch or if you just like didn't eat dinner, that's such a part of you that you'd be like, oh, wow, I feel really hungry. I guess I feel that way because I didn't eat dinner. And it's like the switch I want people to have is, oh, I feel a little off today because I didn't meditate. Like it is just like waking up. It's just something that I do. It's a part of me. And that's exactly what I mean by identity level transformation. Like it's not something you're forcing. It's something that becomes a part of you. Like you breathe or as you talk.
Yeah.
And you need the container and the adjustment period to make that happen.
And a little kind of sobering thought to those listening, thinking they don't have much time. Very simple thought. This is just basic numbers. If you go to bed at 10 p.m., you wake up at 6 a.m., you can have 45 minutes of meditation, 45 minutes of physical exercise done, and you'll be ready to take on your day at 7:30 a.m., right? It's
Yeah.
You know, like if you arrange your life in a way that facilitates these disciplines, like you can easily fit it in, right? Like go to bed at 10 p.m. and have your entire day from 7:30 onwards, and you've already done an hour and a half of discipline practices. It's like, does that sound like a massive waste of time to you? Like a huge drain, you know? Like it doesn't, right? When you picture putting it in the middle of the day, then it seems like, oh, that sounds difficult, but you don't have to do that.
Yeah, you can do it. I mean, the morning for me has been fantastic because it also lands. It's like, I know this is important to me and I'm actually putting it first in my life. Like it is literally the first thing I do. And that really helped. But some people just working schedules, lifestyle, you know, you can also just do it at the end of the day. But yeah, like the real kicker is go to your phone, go to your time tracking thing that all the major operating systems have now. See how much time you spend daily on Instagram. See how much time the entertainment category takes up on your phone. And I am willing to put money for most people that it's somewhere in the range of 1 to 2 hours. And if you just swapped, this is the exact process of what bringing your life into alignment looks like. Because if you fast forward, it's probably spending an hour and a half on Facebook is probably not in your values. If you literally took that time and like judo flipped it into the challenges and into the daily disciplines, that is literally what bringing your life into deeper alignment looks like. Mm. Like, yeah, the time thing, it is a serious time investment. Like it's no joke. I recognize people have 9 to 5s. They might have children as well. Like it is big. Like that's the point. It's a major commitment because it's a major experience and it's a major transformation. But the time, this is the and thing. Remember from earlier in the conversation? Oh yeah, but I'm kind of busy. And you're never not going to be busy. The world fills up your calendar so regularly that you have to impose your own structure. And this is what it means to like show up for yourself, like impose your own structure, create like sacred time. Cause yeah, if you've got an hour, 45 minutes, 2 hours on your phone every day, I guarantee you could drop that to 20 minutes, still keep all of your connections and contacts and relationships in good health and have this like the same amount of time. And you'd probably feel better, right? You'd get fitter. Your mind would get more calm and clear, cultivate your virtues and values. You'd be in integrity. It's not easy, but it's not impossible.
Warrior 100 is kicking off September the 1st. That's the official start date of the experience. You're going to give me a discount link specifically for the listeners of this podcast and my newsletter. So I'll be putting that in the show notes and just like, it'll be around, like you'll see it if you're listening to this on whatever. I'll send out some emails as well. Where can people learn more about what you're working on, what you're doing in a general sense?
Yeah, I think there are two places. We have phoenixculture.earth. It's the website. You can find Hero 100. You can find Warrior 100. I will say that with 95% certainty, we are planning on doing a second round of the Hero 100 for New Year's, you know, really riding like the new year, new me wave. So if the Hero 100 sounded interesting as well, that will be coming up in a couple months. If people want more personal takes and some of my own writing, it's seriousplay.substack.com.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've been working with each other for years, so I will make sure to send out announcements to my list whenever you're releasing something new. So yeah, just rest assured that, you know, if you follow my work, you'll also be hearing about EB's work, Hero 100, Warrior 100, but also go check out Serious Play on Substack. It's really, I love the way that you start those posts, like with the status and location. It's so super cool. And yeah, like I love what you're doing. I really like the focus on discipline over, like I'm all about skill over knowledge, you know, like skill should be the destination. Knowledge is like the stepping stone. And yeah, it's so tempting to just be these like information consumers. It's almost like, you know, when people have read an encyclopedia and they're proud of their trivial knowledge, it's like, that's cool. What's the point though? You know, like, and I think we've become like that with self-care. You know, like I'm an encyclopedia of self-care practices, but I don't meditate. I don't look after my body. I am not very nice to people around me. It's like, great. Well, what's the point? Like, what have you got to show for it? It's all about skill acquisition.
Yeah, and again, like, I feel like it's worth hammering home, like, that is and was me, right? It's actually one of the things I like about the challenge is I've also removed myself from the kind of teacher-student dynamic. Like, I'm in this just as much as everyone else. Our whole team puts up the money for the bet on yourself thing, right? Like, we are in it just as much as everyone because we need it just as much as everyone. Like, this is not a I'm doing it properly and everyone else sucks. This is like, I fucking need this. I would benefit greatly from it. Cause yeah, it's been a huge, the journaling from Hero 100 actually illuminated how much I rest in the, like, if I can talk about the thing, I believe I can do the thing. And it's like, oh, that is so sneaky. I can tell everyone and their mother how to feel better. And yet, do I do those things?
Yeah.
Not as often as I'd like. And fortunately, you can do something about that. You can start at day one.
There's like, I always look at jujitsu as a fun kind of mirror of life, you know, like you can learn a lot about, mm-hmm. similar to the disciplines, right? You can translate them into other areas. And sometimes it's like a funny known thing. You could be training with someone, sparring, and then you're about to tap them out and they'll stop you and teach you what you could do better just before you're about to tap them out. And it's like, I'm beating you here. Like, you just interrupted me to give me advice. Like, you know, and it kind of reminds me of that kind of thing. You know, it's like, because I'm giving you advice, I can feel good. It's like, don't be the person who feels good giving the advice. Feel good being the person who can actually do the thing, right? Like, that's what it's about. Do the thing. That's one of your statements. Do the thing.
Do the thing. Honestly. Yeah. Don't delay. Don't delay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've really enjoyed catching up with you and talking about all of this stuff. I think it's been a great conversation, as it always is, and looking forward to doing it again sometime soon. Appreciate it.
Dude, I hope so. It's always fantastic talking to you, dude. Thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed that, took some value from it. Couple of quick things. If you can leave a rating for the podcast wherever you're listening to it, that really helps new people find it. And I also love reading reviews, so let me know what you think about it. And if you want to go further and get access to all of my premium meditations and audio courses, ask me anything, workshops, etc., consider subscribing to Stoic Handbook Premium with a free trial, either directly within Apple Podcasts or over at stoichandbook.supercast.com. It's the same thing, just two different ways to access it. And I'll see you back here for the next episode of the Stoic Handbook Podcast.